You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to The Fabulous Invalid, Broadway's podcast, where we present essential conversations with a curated roster of the best, most important, and innovative theater makers working today, from actors to writers, directors, designers, and everyone in between. We took our name from the title of a 1938 play by Kaufman and Hart that has since become a loving nickname for Broadway itself, always deemed on the verge of decline, yet always bouncing back, The Fabulous Invalid. I'm theater savant Jamie Dumont.
And I'm Rob Russo, writer and theater critic with StageLeft.nyc and StageLeft, the podcast.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Jamie.
Well, here we are at home.
Yes.
Still.
Yes. Still, exactly. Never left, right?
Never left. Moving forward. Are we moving forward? It's hard
to tell. Yeah, I think so. I'm choosing to believe so.
It's Monday, Tuesday, someday, next day.
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen that going around.
Love yeah,
time
I know
heals
that's
everything.
Not, you know? I'm not original, but it is Tuesday. Yeah. It is a beautiful spring day, so I see out my window. And today we have yet another sort of special episode, kind of in line really with the theme of our show, The Fabulous Invalid, the notion of Broadway bouncing back. Today we'll be discussing the business of Broadway with Lee Seymour, who is the senior contributor of Arts in Hollywood at Forbes magazine. And he was also a producer on The Inheritance, which prematurely closed its run early due to the shutdown. And also is a play that Rob and I are both very, very fond of.
Yes, yes, yes. And also joining us is Dori Berenstein, who is a four-time Tony Award-winning Broadway producer, an Emmy Award-winning director, and producer and writer of film and television. Her Broadway credits include Full Moon, 30 Modern Millie, the 2013 revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and of course, The Prom, which I lost count of how many times I saw. I loved that show.
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment to say for both of us. Love that we have to put a date on what revival of Virginia Woolf it was,
yes,
because every several years there's another really fantastic revival, and of course one that we will never get to see. That
so
closed
sad.
Again because of the shutdown, starring Laurie Metcalf and Rupert Everett.
Yeah. And just to close the loop on Dori, we have to mention that among all of her many hats, she's also the co-founder and CEO of the Broadway Podcast Network, which, of course, this show is a very proud member of. And Stage Left, the podcast, is also a member of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Our beloved BPN.
Well, yes, our little BPN family.
Before we get to our show, I think we wanted to talk about some fun stuff that we've either been streaming or looking forward to streaming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first and foremost, I implore anyone who's listening to this podcast to go check out the Broadway Podcast Network if you haven't already, because there's so much content and folks have gotten very creative, just like us, and they're recording from home and keeping their shows going. So there's a lot of really great podcast content that you can check out on BroadwayPodcastNetwork.com.
There really is. And I think even Mo Brady with The Ensemblist is doing something every single day. He's dealing with either response or how people are, you know, coping. It's really remarkable, not only the content that he's putting out, but also just the incredible people he's talking to. It's really a very good thing to listen to.
Totally, totally. And I think I'm not alone, because I've spoken to several other friends and colleagues who've said the same thing, that like, I'm actually getting a little overwhelmed with the number of things that I can stream and download and tune into and watch and listen to. But one thing I found really helpful, my little tip of the day, is feedermania.com. On their landing page, they have a link called Shows You Can Stream at Home. And they update it daily, and it's a really, really helpful resource for all the different things that are going on. You know, it seems like every theater company has their own little situation going on online. So if you check that out, theatermania.com, Shows You Can Stream Online. It's a really helpful little guide for what you can catch. And I don't know, Jamie, have you tuned into anything that you've really enjoyed?
Well, I've streamed some of the Met live, some of the opera. You can go to metopera.org. They've got quite a few things up. I don't really know how long they're. I can't tell you exactly how long each production has been up for. Nixon in China was the last thing I watched, and it was something I saw at the Met live, and it's almost never done. It's an incredible, incredible production. If it's still up, go check it out.
Totally. My favorite thing is the National Theatre over in the UK. They've been streaming, or rather making available shows from their archive, much like the Met Opera's been doing. And One Man, Two Governors, which was a Richard Bean play that was on Broadway in 2013, I think, with James Corden, was available. I don't know if it still is, to stream in full. And I just absolutely loved that play.
I hope it's still available, because I forgot to watch it. And I think about a week, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they're releasing them on an ongoing basis. I mean, even something as simple as City Center, you know, the Encore series, they've been releasing, sort of like a song a day through their own little video series that they have online, which is a fun little short thing that you can tune into every day to get a little dose of Broadway. Something else I read about that I thought was really cool is the Irish Repertory Theatre Company, which is, I think, one of the great sort of like hidden gems of New York theatre. They're located in Chelsea. They have a little initiative that they're calling The Show Must Go Online, which is pretty clever. And they've got, alumni of their shows recording videos of monologues and songs and scenes from, the Irish-American canon. So you can find that at irishrep.org. And I know New York Theatre Workshop, which is another, talk about an amazing powerhouse company. They've been doing masterclasses and fireside chats with, some of the folks who've been involved in their productions that are pretty neat. I think for those, you need to reserve a spot.
For those, you need to go to nytw.org and sign up and register, but it's well worth it. They have masterclasses with Rachel Chavkin, Doug Wright, Jeremy O'Harris, Celine Strong, Celia Keenan-Bolger, and I'm sure they'll be announcing many, many more as the weeks go on.
Yeah, cool. Amazing. Awesome. Well, before we get to our conversation with Lee and Dory all about the business of Broadway during this rather perilous moment for the industry, there's some breaking news today from the American Theater Wing. And we were very delighted to be able to have an opportunity to chat with Heather Hitchens, who is the president and CEO of the American Theater Wing. We had her on the show, I guess, almost a little more than a year ago to talk about the wing and all the great stuff that they do. So we're gonna chat with her real quick about how the wing is responding to COVID-19, and then we'll get to Lee and Dory.
Heather, thank you for joining us today. As many of you know, Heather is the president and the CEO of The Wing, and The Wing had a big announcement today.
Yes, we did, and I'm delighted to be here. These are very surreal and difficult times, and we at The Wing, like every theater organization, like every person, like every institution, has been really sort of digging deep and figuring out what we need to do to pivot and to respond to the times we're living in with this COVID-19 pandemic. And we made a series of announcements of what we're calling our first response to this, because, you know, I think one of the things that makes this pandemic so difficult is that we don't know how long it's going to last. Most of the media and entertainment, the publicly traded media entertainment companies, have withdrawn their guidance because they're just saying we don't know. So I've been telling people this is a marathon, it's not a sprint, and that we have to stay flexible, nimble, and responsive. So we looked at our core capabilities and said, how can we pivot? How can we respond? And first of all, there was a pressing decision in front of us regarding the Obie Awards. The Obie Awards were to take place May 18th at Terminal 5. It became clear to us, two things became clear to us. One, that we probably weren't going to be able to gather by then. Mm-hmm. And two, the season had been cut short. Because when this hit, you know, we're in the process of compiling a list, but there, I think our list is up to 90 productions off and off Broadway that had to cancel or postpone, and over 500 artists affected. And so we were left with a bit of a dilemma. The judges of the Obie judges, led by the amazing Rachel Houck and Sam Pinkleton, really felt strongly that we take the time to honor what did exist off Broadway and off Broadway this season, because it was extraordinary. And but that we also find a way to acknowledge what had been lost, because all this art had been lost. Much of it will not come back. And so what you heard today was that we were both going to have a digital Obies presentation to honor the social distancing. But we were also going to take some of the funds that we would have used to produce the Obies, along with more substantial funds that we raised, to create a relief fund targeted to the artists who were involved in the productions that were canceled or postponed. It's not much. It's a small gesture. It's $250,000. It's up to $500 per artist until the funds run out. But it was, you know, us speaking to our core values, us making a gesture, and to say to the world that, like, this is, we're doing our part here, and everybody, if everybody does their part, we can get through this. That was the immediate thing. And then we said, we are the American Theater Wing. We are the big tent for theater. We're about Broadway, off Broadway, and the regions. And how do we, respond nationally? And we, for many years, ran something called the National Theater Company Grants, and there were 82 companies that had gone through a vetting process that we said, these are fabulous companies all over the country that have done great work. Can we just reach out to them and say, you know, in solidarity, we have your back. Here's $1,000 to keep going. So that's the second part of the response. And then the third part of the response that was in today's announcement was, a big part of what we do beyond honoring excellence on and off Broadway and in the regions is training, supporting, educating the next generation. And so many of these kids, well, all of them are home, right? So whether they go to high school or they go to college, they're studying from home. And so for a lot of these theater kids, they're missing out on productions, classes, live and in person. And we thought, we do all these, you know, live and in-person workshops. Why don't we just take advantage of the technology situation and let's launch a series of online masterclasses and workshops for people on both on stage and off, and do it through Zoom and Facebook Live, and give all the kids at home some access to, you know, Broadway's greatest talents. And so we're excited to be launching that very soon as a way to also, you know, continue that educational mission.
So all of these programs that you've announced, that you can learn more about them on your website, theamericantheaterwing.org, correct?
Correct.
Amazing. And I'm curious. I know that there was an announcement earlier that the Tony Awards, which, you know, is another one of your signature annual events, had been postponed. Is there any update on that front, or is it sort of a stay tuned?
It's a stay tuned. We're working, you know, our collective butts off on it. It's a complicated.
I can imagine. Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, it doesn't really take a crisis, but the crisis really does bring out people's true colors, and the true colors of the Broadway community are pretty spectacular. You know, there's lots of ideas, there's lots of opinions, but they're mostly, the most important thing is there's a lot of heart, and there's a lot of integrity, and there's a lot of grit. And those are three qualities that are going to come up with the right solution for us and allow us to move forward elegantly.
Wherever all of this lands, it will be exactly that. It will be elegant as it always is. And, we've really enjoyed in the past couple of weeks getting to talk to folks who were doing exactly what you described, you know, which is why we wanted to have you on today, and responding and bringing out all the best qualities and features of this community, and bringing the heart and the creativity to keep us all together and to keep us moving forward.
Thank you so much for your time today, Heather. The Wing is an extraordinary institution, and it's times like this that leaders like you show us what it is to be a leader. And so we appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I'm sitting here in my up in the Catskills, trying my best. This is the time when, you know, it's the hardest time to be a leader, but this is when you realize you're incredibly privileged to be able to move something forward and help a community heal.
Well, thank you so much.
And healing we need to do. All right, Heather, thank you so much. We'll let you get on with your day.
Thank you. Thank you.
And now for our conversation with Lee and Dory.
Lee and Dory, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thrilled to be with you.
Yes, yes. Well, as we all know, Broadway was shut down on March 12th, and this was a really historic decision without precedent, really, and stands to have an unprecedented impact on the business as a whole. Dory, as a Broadway producer with a show, you know, currently up that was poised to open just before this shutdown, how did you find out about the decision to shut down Broadway, and what was your first thought?
Well, you know, the writing seemed to be on the wall. I think everybody was anticipating some kind of shutdown, at least a brief shutdown, until everybody could get their arms around what in the world was going on and how we needed to react responsibly. I'm also on the Board of Governors, so I was part of the discussions that were happening early on, leading up to the decision to close. So I knew about it and knew it was coming on. Of course, I was completely heartbroken for all the shows and all the 16 shows that were about to open that were poised, you know, for opening night, and they are not getting their chance. So just really heartbroken, but also devastated for the ticket buyers and people who, you know, had been planning on attending all these shows for so long, and maybe people traveling for spring break and coming to New York City, and that everything just came to a standstill. So it's just in every way heartbreaking.
Lee, your beat for Forbes is literally the business of Broadway, and you're also a producer of The Inheritance, which was up this season but also had to close a couple of days early because of the shutdown. How did you hear about it, and what were your initial thoughts?
I first heard about it while I was actually driving away from New York. I left New York three weeks ago, the day that it got shut down. So I heard about it from my partner, who was on the phone and got a news notification as we were driving past New Rochelle, which at the time was functionally quarantined. So it felt like we were kind of racing horrifying news up the coast away from the city. My first thought in that case was, fuck, we are so fucked. and to echo Dory's point as well, I don't mean that to sound so flippant. It's it's terrifying and so saddening. I think we got in some way a very bittersweet silver lining with The Inheritance, because we only lost 4 performances, I think, before we were set to close. And as Dory said, there's 16 shows that never even got to open, and many of those probably won't. And that's just horrifying.
I just want to say how much I love The Inheritance. I thought it was so magnificent. Just jumping
in. You so much. Thank you, Dory.
Well, Dory, I'm glad that you mentioned the ticket buyers as well, because I feel like I haven't really seen that perspective, spoken about from folks in the industry. Obviously everyone's concerned about the shows that they were working on and the actors and the creatives, mm-hmm. and making sure everybody is, being taken care of in this time. But, Broadway is the heart of the New York economy, and people, going to a Broadway show is a really special thing. Those of us on this episode today, we see Broadway shows all the time. But for your average theater goer, it's it's an event, and it's something that you plan for. Right. I was wondering if both of you, or if you can take turns, could give a bit of an illustration of what Broadway means to the economy of New York.
So Broadway, what it means literally to the economy of New York, just in number terms, is it means almost $14 billion per year. In revenue and economic impact. It means 87,000 jobs that are supported by the industry and almost $600 million in tax revenue. So it is a cornerstone of the city, both with its cultural cachet and as a driver for other industries like restaurants and hospitality and tourism. It's huge. I know this is kind of often quoted, but I think it's really worth saying again that more people see a Broadway show in any given year than see the attendance of all 10 major New York and New Jersey sports teams combined. So it's huge.
That's my favorite statistic about Broadway.
Yeah.
When you think of New York, it is this very special destination for this one-of-a-kind live experience. I mean, not that it doesn't exist all over the world, but I mean, New York is very much known for that. So it hits at the heart of New York. And absolutely. With $2 billion a year in ticket sales, it's a giant hit to the economy and to all the people that are the 87,000 jobs that are lost because of it. It's massive.
Yeah. What's incredible to me is that $2 billion in ticket sales trickles out to be $14 billion in total economic impact, which speaks to what Lee, you were saying. It's not just the shows, but it's restaurants, it's hotels, it's parking lots, it's souvenir shops. It's the whole ecosystem of Midtown, basically, that hangs on Broadway.
It's massive. It's absolutely massive.
Wow. So now that we're in this shutdown era, and I should say we're recording this on April 3rd, so news is changing all the time. But as of now, we don't know when Broadway will be back. The initial shutdown was till April 12th, but I don't think anybody believes that is actually going to be the extent of it. Dory, how does a producer navigate this time and make the decision, the hard decision of whether to close, like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Hangmen already have, or to weather the storm, and what factors go into that decision?
Well, this is new territory. Obviously nobody has been through this before, and I think that what's positive is that everybody is working together to try and figure it out, and everybody is working very hard to figure out how to support all the people in the community who are out of work at the same time. In terms of how you manage this and navigate this for your show, I think it so depends on the show. The longer this goes on, the more challenging it is for any show. But you can have a show that is so dependent on tourism, and you have to think about, well, what does this mean? Even if Broadway ramps up, it's going to be much longer potentially before we have an influx of tourism again. And so it's not like you can just turn the lights on when that moment comes and you're back in business. So it's going to affect, different shows in different ways. There are a lot of shows, and I admire this so deeply, that have, completely embraced Zoom and Zencastr and all these digital platforms, and they're continuing to rehearse and are continuing to work with their shows to keep things fresh and moving forward and anticipating return. And that's fantastic and low cost. But ultimately, you know, in addition to all the marketing and advertising that's going to go into having to reboot and let the world know that we're back and that you can buy tickets to these shows and come see them, assuming the world is comfortable stepping back into these environments, you know, you're going to have to get back in the rehearsal room and start to get ready. And that costs money that no one ever anticipated having to spend again. And so producers are needing to regroup and figure out how are we going to finance this. And some shows, perhaps because of the teams around the shows or their investors or because of the money that had already come in, they're able to start to figure out how they're going to finance this. And in other instances, it's just an unknown. It's overwhelmingly daunting and perhaps devastating. So and no one knows when this is going to end. So it's changing every day.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Dory, outside of the sort of surprise costs you just outlined, the costs of having to go back and rehearse when you didn't put that into your initial budget, because why would you? What are the costs associated with keeping a show sort of in a hold pattern right now?
Well, I think one of the things that is being discussed is trying to figure out what are the obligations in terms of ongoing payments. And of course, every show is working closely with the Broadway League and the unions to try and make sure that the artists involved and all the people around the show are paid for as long as it's possible to pay them. At the same time, it's not like many of the shows, and particularly the new shows, have resources to keep that going indefinitely. And you also have the obligation of paying rent to the theater owners, and not clear on how that's all going to play out in terms of how long that obligation will exist and how people can sustain that. So there are a lot of considerations, and everyone is trying to navigate this and get as much support for their show family as possible along the way.
Well, from a sort of business angle, Lee, I'm curious what your perspective is, you know, because it seems to me that the worst thing you ever want in any sort of business is lack of clarity and inability to plan for the future, right? And that's sort of where Broadway is right now. And, you know, as we've already talked about, it's not just the, 41 theaters on Broadway. It's the ecosystem that benefits from that as well. What do you see as the particular difficulties and challenges, in this moment where there is a lack of clarity and inability to plan?
I mean, Dory hit a lot of it right on the head. I mean, the big things that I would think about are all of these sort of unforeseen costs, like re-rehearsing. But like she said, also, it's going to be different for every show, right? And so for example, a limited run show that has movie stars attached to it, so like American Buffalo, Plaza Suites, How I Learned to Drive this season, those are going to be really, really difficult. Even if they do have, you know, really strong reserves, those can be difficult to remount in the fall or next spring or whenever it happens, because they're tied to star schedules, right? So that's one category. There's also shows that were sort of selling okay, but maybe not stellar, which depending on the reserves of each show, that's going to dictate basically how long they can keep paying people. So my understanding, and Dora, you might know more about this than I do, is that we've just hit the end of the 3 weeks that was originally negotiated between the league and the unions, where anyone who is currently in a show that was running or about to open was going to get compensated through these 3 weeks. And then past that, it was sort of up to the individual shows based on what their resources are. So we've now just hit that. It's 3 weeks since it shut down. So from here on out, it's a big question mark. And I think the worst thing we could do as an industry, big picture, in light of this lack of clarity, is to reopen before it's safe to do so. We're sort of in an impossible situation, right? So China just tried to reopen some of its theaters, and then they had to shut everything back down because that reopening of congregation spaces created a new surge of infections. And that false start, like Dory was saying, represented millions spent in re-rehearsals, remarketing, re-advanced building, all of which was functionally burned when they had to shut everything back down again a couple days later. So that's what we want to avoid, both for like the personal health of our audiences and also long-term economic health of the business. We can't afford multiple false starts. And that's excruciating in the meantime.
And I completely agree with that. And the other thing, when you think about it, when you think about so many of the shows where there is incredible dancing and intimacy and all that, it's the actor's safety as well. And we can't jump the gun on that either.
Absolutely.
Well, while we're in this interim moment, what do you think, if anything, the government at all levels, both, you know, city, state, and federal, and private philanthropy could be doing to help the industry that perhaps it currently already isn't?
Well, I was really excited to see that some philanthropists got together and created a $75 million fund for arts organizations that specifically have operating budgets under $20 million and they can apply for grants. So that was such a good gesture, and I hope will inspire others to do that, to support the arts. But, you know, I think that with the SBA loans, I think so many of the organizations in the community are right now on their computers poised to press the button and apply and hopefully get some relief, at least for a little while. You know, I think it also is amazing what's going on in terms of the community coming together to support Broadway Cares and the Actors Fund and all the work that they're doing to support so many in our community who are now out of work.
I mean, we need money and rent freezes in terms of like government and private philanthropy, money in people's pockets and a relief from the obligation to pay things like rent and mortgages. That's like literally it, you know, an ideal response from the way I look at it would be a complete freeze for X amount of months. No one pays rent, no one pays taxes, no one pays mortgages, no one pays insurance premiums, etc. The only money used, you know, which could come from these stimulus bills, would be for groceries and supply and chain maintenance. And then the Fed ideally would buy up all that debt, which it can do, and just never collect on it. And we have, you know, a couple of lost months that are functionally written off the books at the end of it once people are able to go back to work.
Lee, you have my vote.
Lee, yeah. 2020.
Yeah. I think we're starting a campaign right here. Yeah, right. It's sort of shocking. It is shocking that this hasn't happened already. That heels are being dragged on this at all is quite unfortunate. So I have a question for both of you. You know, I think there's a thing you can say about Broadway that it's too big to fail, you know, much like the banks in 2008. But I'm curious, how does this compare to like a major financial crisis or even 9/11 where the theaters were shut down for a couple of days? Are there similarities? Are there differences? Is it too early to kind of even make that comparison?
Well, when you think about 9/11, the theaters, I believe, shut down for 2 days. So it's radically different. And it was also, for the community and the whole city and to come together in support of an enemy that was tangible. You know, you knew what happened for the most part and, you know, to stand tall against it. You can't stand tall against this, you know, and it is omnipresent. So it's a very different battle. We were able to ramp up and recover much more quickly. In 2008, it was, I can tell you as a producer, it was challenging for the shows in terms of, you know, some loss of audience, but also raising financing for new projects was really difficult during that time. But these are all, you know, no one was life was at risk at that point. You know, it wasn't about that and survival and loss of massive jobs. It's just night and day. This is a much different situation for the whole community.
Yeah, I was about to say that it's less of a comparison and more of a contrast. You know, 9/11 was really an exogenous shock to the system, right? So people were scared. We shut the theaters down. But like Dory said, you could come back and stand tall together. After 9/11, you didn't run the risk of somehow becoming a terrorist by attending the theater, right? Now we have the risk of you attend the theater and you could become a disease vector. And like that is something that nobody can do anything about right now. And I do also want to highlight, like, the longer this goes on, like Dory said, 9/11 was a 2-day shutdown. 2008, the industry was in a slightly tougher spot, but sales, if you look back at what the industry was doing then sales wise, we dipped, 2 or 3% maybe relative to what we'd been doing. But because there was still a relatively healthy flow of tourists into the city, we weren't hit as hard as some other sectors in 2008 and 2009. But now, basically, the farther we push back, there's the added complication of the landlords who are, Broadway is a real estate business on a certain level. We've got 40 theaters, maybe now if you want to not include the Palace under renovation. But those booking schedules can be set up to a year or two in advance. So this is going to be a whole separate wave of tough choices 6 to 8 to 12 months from now when the landlords have to decide between honoring agreements with shows that got shut down or honoring agreements with a show that's been planning on that theater being available for the last 18 months. So there's this added level of pain that's probably going to come in that we're not really thinking about yet.
And it's interesting, I believe the general sort of historical take on 9/11 is that it basically forced 3 shows to close prematurely, that there were 3 shows, I think it was Kiss Me Kate, Rocky Horror, and one other one that, like, you know, were poised to run longer. And because the audience wasn't there, the tourist market wasn't there, they had to close earlier. Something that I imagine is going to be the case here is, as Dory mentioned, once we're back, that doesn't mean that the audience is back at the levels that it was. And, you know, Broadway, as we all know, has been booming for well over a decade now. It's every year sort of besting itself. Do we think this is the end of that boom? I mean, I think the answer to that is yes. But, how do you anticipate this will change the business of Broadway moving forward?
Well, I'm a very hopeful person, and I really believe that this obviously has put a major damper on things for the foreseeable future, but that we will rebound. I believe in that deeply, and I think I'm also justified in that belief because I'm looking at, work with you both on the Broadway Podcast Network. And what I'm seeing from that vantage point is that you have the world of podcasting out there that has dropped by 20% overall because people aren't commuting. And that's often when they're listening to podcasts, right? Mm. But the Broadway Podcast Network, and I think Playbill as well, we're seeing a gigantic leap of 20 to 30%, depending on the day, in podcast listening, because our community is so passionate and is all about connectivity and wanting to be together. And there's such love and confidence in the art, you know, belief and in the power of the art. So I do think that when the dust clears and we're able to get together and be together in that space, that Broadway is going to come on really strong, because everybody out there they are not going to let anything but that happen. I'm really seeing that online right now, and I really feel that Broadway will come back strong whenever the time is right for it to come back.
I agree. I mean, the only thing people are going to want to do when it's safe to do so is spend time with each other and and indulge in the joys that they've been denied for months. So I totally agree with Dory. I think that when we bounce back, we will bounce back hugely. My fear, and this actually relates back to the last question about, you know, comparisons to past crises. The one way in which I think that this could be a really apt comparison is its effect on the smaller theaters and the off-Broadway market. So one of the biggest fallouts of 9/11 was that a number of downtown theaters, basically the closer you were to the Two Towers, the more likely you were, if you were a downtown theater, the more likely you were to lose your space, because people were more frightened of going downtown than they were of coming back up to Midtown. And here, for a different reason, I'm very frightened for the smaller to mid-sized downtown theaters, the ones that remain, because if they don't get the kind of relief that they need, they're not, you know, they don't necessarily have millions and millions in reserve cash. The greatest indignity of this all, I think, would be to see yet another downtown theater turned into a fucking Sephora because they didn't have a big enough endowment to weather this.
I agree with you. What I'm hoping, though, is that a lot of those downtown theaters have very committed younger audiences. And I'm hoping that what happens is that, you know, the since people of a certain age are a little bit more insulated from this virus than others, that I think that if they can come on strong and start supporting theater downtown, excuse me, then that could mitigate that problem. I can only hope that that's what happens.
I hope so too.
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking a lot about Off-Broadway in the last few weeks, because I feel like it's getting overlooked a little bit in all of this. And my hope is that when we start to bounce back from this and people return to the theater, that Off-Broadway actually has a resurgence and a boom. Maybe that the economics of doing an Off-Broadway show could get a little easier, but also the fact that the theaters are smaller and it's a smaller group of people coming together might be more enticing for an audience than sitting in a big theater with 1,200 or 2,000 people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, in some ways, absolutely. Like, I think, I mean, I have to assume this is the case, that the reversal of the various orders against congregating will take place in reverse order. So the smaller spaces will be, you know, come online, so to speak, before the big spaces. So I do think that we'll see off-Broadway theaters come back online before we see Broadway houses, just given the size of the places. I hope that this will in some way provide an opportunity to re-examine how we fund theater in general, both commercial and nonprofit. I hope it basically gives us a chance to look at how we set up contingencies for riskier shows and riskier products, upon which we're still betting people's livelihoods, regardless of how, you know, safe a bet they are commercially. So I think there's a great opportunity here for Broadway and the arts more broadly to lobby now, especially in this next round of stimulus that's going to come through Congress, for a federal subsidy, something similar to what exists in the UK, or something like a very generous tax forgiveness package, something like that. I think there's a really strong, there's no better time right now for us to lobby on behalf of a more secure federal level safety net for the arts.
Yeah, you know, and something, you know, speaking about, you know, big picture and sort of structural changes and things looking forward that would help this industry, you know, what's really come into high relief throughout this moment is sort of the lack of pre-existing resiliency built into this business, and how it seems like everybody was caught kind of flat-footed, and there was no alternative than to just shut everything down, right? There was nothing in already planned or in train as a plan B for what to do with live performance when people cannot congregate. And we're seeing now, and it's been a couple of weeks, a patchwork of streaming services coming online and people creating content from various locations. But I'm wondering if either of you have any thoughts about what this industry can do once we get past this immediate crisis, to be more resilient in the future, whether it's having a pro tape available for every show so that when we have to shut down because of something, you can offer that to ticket buyers as something that they can still access to keep a revenue stream, you know, things like that. Do you have any ideas or thoughts about this idea of resiliency for the industry?
I think that's a really good idea. I do think that it's important for, you know, if particularly for the off-Broadway theaters that have shows, and what they have basically is, in some instances, is a lockdown shoot from the back of the house, you know, and that isn't how you want people to experience theater. And so
right.
If there was some kind of fund that would give shows the opportunity to capture high quality versions of their show, and that was carefully curated, then I think that that would be a wonderful thing. And I think a wonderful thing to have the record of that show. But I think we have to be careful because it could backfire if it's not done well. But I am inspired by the resiliency of our community and how they have come together online to be innovative in creating entertainment and to connecting with the audience. And I think what will actually come out of that perhaps is other layers of ways that we can communicate about our shows and get people excited about it, and create programming around the shows, talkbacks, engagement with people involved behind the curtain, where you can have all these experiences around a show without, you know, having to be in the theater. And I think that could potentially expand people's engagement and excitement about a show. And I think that is something that could come out of this whole thing that could end up having a positive impact on the community and growing the excitement about theater. Because at the end of the day, there isn't anything like live theater. And so, right. You know, to the extent that all of these things help generate excitement about what's possible, at the end of the day, you still have to show up and have that communal experience and all be together to experience the show in the room.
Yeah, we all want to be in the room where it happens.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. As we get to the end of this wonderful conversation, we could talk forever about the business of Broadway. The Tony Awards are obviously sort of a beacon for Broadway and kind of the organizing principle, you know, structurally of the season, right? They kind of dictate when the season ends and begins. You know, shows plan, you know, not only around theater availability, but also around, you know, the Tonys and having a maximum impact and building a campaign. Since, you know, as of today, we don't know the fate of the Tonys this year, and, you know, they're certainly not happening on June 7th. We know that. But how does the lack of a Tonys or the postponing of a Tonys impact the business end of things as we're looking forward and trying to navigate the waters ahead?
Like you said, I think the Tonys can provide a sort of temporary lifeline to certain shows, and winning can occasionally be the difference between closing and turning a profit. However, I mean, in this case, I don't know. I try to be an optimist as well, and I'm wondering if this is not if something that could come out of this is maybe a re-evaluation of exactly of like Tony timelines in general of when we hold them, what they do for the industry. I mean, they're partly, I'm not exactly sure when the Tonys became set as a June thing. I don't know if it, how long before tourist season really became a thing over the summers. Cause right now it coincides with the very beginning of when a lot of tourists are going to be coming to the city, which is perfect for shows that want a kind of national commercial then. And really, I don't know. I think that's what we're looking at. If the Tonys happen this year, which they might not, I mean, we could be looking at more of a just like acknowledgement gratitude type ceremony. If they feel that too many shows were left off the docket, we could be looking at, you know, a ceremony where we're basically just recognizing shows that went up last year, but most of them will be closed or postponed and won't necessarily benefit from the exposure. So really, I think the big takeaway could be the Tonys could be and maybe should be like Broadway's calling card back to the nation of like, we're here, we're open for business, it's safe, like come back to Broadway. I feel like we're looking for bang for buck for the industry. If that's the timing, that makes sense. The question is whether or not that means postponing the Tonys for, you know, 12 months as opposed to 3, which we still have no idea whether or not that's going to be necessary.
Yeah.
I would think that the most important thing about the Tony Awards for the shows is to be seen on the Tony Awards, to have that moment to perform. The Tony Awards only really moves the needle in a big way for the show that wins Best Musical. And otherwise, it's about the shows having that moment to shine on the Tony Awards. So to have a major event sooner rather than later that gives all these shows that are going to be reopening the chance to shine and to be out there for the audience to see, I think Broadway is going to need that really badly. And I don't think it's going to be about, you know, who gets the actual Tony. I think that's going to be a lot less important than putting Broadway out there and saying, we're back and come and see our shows. And that's what the Tonys, the next Tonys should be about to me.
No, I agree 100%.
As we finish this conversation, Lee, I want you to take off your journalism hat, and Dory, I want you to take off your producer hat. And just as fans of the theater, can you each tell me what would be the first show you'd like to be an audience member of?
Ooh.
Wow. Oh, my
I want to go back to 6.
Excellent.
Well, everything. I would start at one show and then I'd sneak out and go to another one and another one. Right. And I just want to see, I'd be so excited to be back in the theater with everyone and just, you know, just seeing the lights on and people pouring into the theaters. You know, it doesn't matter. I'd go to any show. I'd just be happy that it was thriving and alive and happening.
Oh my gosh, Dory, that is such a more diplomatic answer than me. I love it.
But also six, right? You know? Well, that's funny. You know, I think we're all having all sorts of emotions every day as we go through this time. The other day, I got very nostalgic for Wicked out of nowhere. And I thought to myself, I mean, I like Wicked and I haven't seen it since like 2012, but I've been thinking like, I need to go back to see Wicked. Like when we're able to go and see Broadway shows again, I'm getting a ticket for Wicked, you know.
Guys, thank you both so much for this. This was a fantastic conversation, and I appreciate we both appreciate your time today.
Thank you. This was fascinating and hopeful. We're going to get there.
Yes. Likewise, this was lovely. Dory, it's so nice talking with you like this. This is fabulous.
You too, Lee. And Jamie, always so great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you guys for having us.
It's groundbreaking,
earth-shaking,
life-affirming,
breathtaking,
gut-wrenching,
heart-aching,
into
just what we do.
Rob here. That's our show. Thanks for listening. At this difficult time, please consider making a donation to the Actors Fund at actorsfund.org. The Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M Etc. and the Fabulous Invalid LLC, and a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Our theme music is by Lucky Chops. Today's episode was edited and engineered by Charles Van Kirk. You can find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com and on social media at Fabulous Invalid and on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday. Stay well and be safe.
The lady's improving, removing all doubt. She has hidden charms that are sure to come out. You're bound to discover this book's not her cover. So don't make a move you'll regret. So I'm begging you, sir, no reneging on her. Don't give up on her. Yet.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.